Coming up on today's show...
When it was Grand Funk and Joplin on the same roster, if I went on first, I would hang out and watch her. If she went on first, she would hang out and watch us.
When I was young, I listened to the words of men, but that was then, and I won't listen to them anymore. They told me things I should believe, but all it did was make me grieve, so I won't listen to them anymore.
Merry Christmas and welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Northern Michigan, my guest is a singer, songwriter, guitar player who was one of the founding members of the legendary band Grand Funk Railroad. In September, he released a full album, and his American band continues to tour, including a cruise that they will play on next March. He is a platinum recording artist 30 times over and even earned a Dove Award nomination. A music video for one of the songs on his new album got more than 25,000 views in just the first 4 weeks alone of being on his official YouTube channel. On and off the stage, he works tirelessly to honor our nation's service personnel and veterans wherever they are stationed. You've been hearing a song called Anymore from his new album. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Mark Farner.
Hey, Bruce, good to be with you, brother.
Likewise, Mark, likewise. I've been looking forward to this, and thank you so much for making time to talk with me today.
It's my pleasure.
Let's get started by having you share all about the song of yours that was just playing called Anymore.
Well, when my son Jesse, you know, he was quadriplegic and on life support, and he was on the main floor of our house living there. He passed in 2018, by the way. God rest his sweet little soul. But anyways, I was playing my guitar out in the living room, where it's a, you know, it's a pretty big area with a hardwood floor, and the acoustic guitar sounds really good out there. So that's what I do. I'd always bring it down. Mm. And I was hoping that he was listening to me all the time. Mm. And he was a lot. But this particular day, when I walked in, he said, "What was that song you were playing earlier today, Dad?" I said, "It's a new one I'm working on called Anymore." He says, "Well, I just want you to know that song's a hit."
Ooh.
And it blew my mind. Bless his heart. He just really liked that guitar lick, and I was singing a little bit, but he really liked the guitar chord progression. Mm. The song itself is all about... life and forgiveness, and which I have found to be the greatest reward ever out of all the things I have achieved.
Wow.
In life, you know, forgiveness, attaining forgiveness. Mm. And giving forgiveness is the greatest reward I believe anybody could have.
Wow, what a powerful way to start this interview. Gosh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's, you know, it is something that we are all capable of, but it I don't think it's been defined and cherished the way it should be.
Mm. Well, I wonder, so thinking back to that day when you were playing it in the house, as the audience goes out and finds that song to listen to in its entirety, what might they hear that was not in it when you first wrote it? Meaning, did the song change much from concept to finished product?
All I had was the first verse that Jesse heard.
Mm-hmm.
I did not have the second verse until Mark Slaughter, who was, you know, involved with it, him and I got together, and I was doing a scratch vocal so we could, you know, you always put a scratch vocal on whatever you're recording so you know where you're at in the song.
Yeah.
You don't have to guess your count, you know, bars or whatever. So when I got to Tennessee in the studio, that's where the second verse happened, and it says, in the beginning, it was me and my band. It's sad to say that we don't play together anymore. It's not the quantity, it's the honesty, my friend. The story ends, and I'm not angry with them anymore. That was not in there when Jesse heard it.
Wow. Well, congratulations on the new album, which is titled Closer to My Home. And audience, you heard me say that Anymore is one of the songs on that album. And at first glance, it would appear as though there are 9 songs on the album, but in fact, the CD version contains a bonus track. But Mark, go ahead and tell us all about Closer to My Home, including where it was recorded, who you worked with on it, over what period of time you made the album, all the details.
Well, Bruce, it started a couple of years ago, a little over 2 years ago. Mark Slaughter, who is the producer of this album and a very close friend of mine, I loved working with him because he has the same mindset and we worship the same Jesus Christ. It is a pleasure to be with people who are like-minded, especially spiritually, when it seems as though all around us spiritually has been shoved aside, you know. So working on the album in that mindset, and it was a comfort to me, Bruce. I would go into the studio looking forward to that, yeah, here we are. I mean, it was unlike any other album that I've ever recorded, because I never looked forward so much to being with somebody as I did with Mark Slaughter.
Wow.
And being that we are both part Native American, I think we, our minds are very much alike as far as what we prioritize and what really is valuable to us in this life. So working with him in the studio in Tennessee, I mean, outside, dude, it's hotter than the sheriff's pistol, you know? And we are inside with the AC going, and I found out that his Great Pyrenees dogs, one of them called Happy, he was laying in the control room of the studio, and I was in there, you know, Mark was setting up a microphone, and I started singing, and the dog starts howling in the background. And Slaughter goes, oh, no, Happy, you can't be in here doing that. You know, it was like, he said, you brought something out of him, Farner. I went, okay. Well, it seemed like it was pretty good. He was trying to harmonize with me.
Yeah, we might get someone to do backing vocals, but it's not going to be the dog.
That's right. Yeah, it was a great process. I thought it was blessed just from the aspect of, you know, we only had a little time together when we did get together. Sometimes it would be 3 days, sometimes 4 days. We, you know, sometimes 2 days. I would take whatever we had because he's a touring musician. I'm a touring musician. And to get that time that we are both off, you know, simultaneously, that was more difficult than we anticipated. Mm. But when it happened, Bruce, it was magic. And like one day, I just got to tell you, we're doing a take, and, you know, we heard this noise out, and he said, oh, it's UPS. And he goes to the door, and he grabs the UPS box, brings it into the studio, unpacks it. It's a 12-string electric guitar.
Oh, gosh.
And he plugs it in. It's so close to being in tune. It's amazing. And I tune to 432. I don't tune to the American standard 440.
Mm.
440 hertz is, of course, since 1953, the American standard. Rockefeller changed it in 1953 from the old standard, which was 4-3-2, and I'm old school, so I went back to 4-3-2. At any rate, he plugs it in. It's so close, I'm telling you. He had to tweak it just a little bit, and then he said this would sound great right where we're at. He hit the record button, Bruce, and played into the song Facade. I went, I can't believe what just happened. You go to get a UPS package, unbox it, and plug it right straight into the board, and here we go. We're recording, and we are just happened to be where it needed to be, in the bridge. And that's when we stopped. I was like, man, that was supposed to happen.
Yeah,
I believe that was designated.
I was going to say divine intervention for sure. But I'm glad that you told that story for another reason. I'm always surprised. Now, granted, I do admire humility, and when a guest comes on the show and says, yeah, I play guitar, but no, you know, in a place like Nashville, you got the best players. There's people that can do it better than me. We got someone else to play. And I would have been surprised if in your case, you had told me that someone was brought in other than yourself or Mark to play guitar on it. So I'm glad that, again, that story was very timely.
Yeah, thank you.
So Mark Slaughter, those that don't know, the band Slaughter, of course, you're talking about how he produced your album. How did the two of you originally meet to begin with?
Well, we were in New York City doing a rock and roll fantasy camp, Bruce. Of course, David Fischoff, who runs the camp, he told me, Howard Stern wants you to come over and play I'm Your Captain on his show. And I said, well, how does he want it? Acoustic, or does he want me to do it, you know, electric? I said, I know these guys that are here know the song. And he says, no, he wants you to come and bring the band. He said, take the fantasy band with you. So on bass, Bruce, we had Kip Winger. On drums, we had Sandy Gennaro from Joan Jett's band. On keyboard, we had Teddy Zigzag from Guns N' Roses. We had Bruce Kulick on acoustic guitar, Mark Slaughter on second, me on first, and we go do the Stern show.
That is a fantasy band, by the way.
yeah, man. And he loved it. Stern, I'm telling you, he cracked that great big smile. All you saw was teeth through the whole song. He was just smiling the whole time. It was wonderful. I started with headphones on. You know, you're doing a TV thing, and you want to stay in sync. But I don't know. There's something about having those cans on, Bruce. I can't do that. I just kind of like the thing started, and I jerked them off real quick, and everybody else kept theirs on. But I'm standing maybe 2-3 feet away from Slaughter, and I hear him and Kip Winger singing the background vocals. It was perfect, and I had goosebumps then, man, and I was thinking, thank God that I've got these guys to do this song. It couldn't have been any better, man. I mean, really, they just had it down. And they're guys that have told me how much they admired my songs, they admired my style, and loved playing with me. So, I mean, you got guys like that. It was just a blessing. And then when we got done, I'm talking with Slaughter. I had been playing some of the song, Oh Darlin', that is on this album, this current album mine, and I was playing it in the green room, just the chords. And Slaughter says, what is that song, Farner? I says, it's called Oh Darlin'. He said, man, I'd like to work on that with you. And here it was, I mean, years later, I get to the studio, you know, in Tennessee, and I start playing Oh Darlin'. He says, yeah, that, I remember that song. And we put it on the album. It was great. But we really got to know each other there at Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp, New York City, thanks to David Fischoff. And we've been tight ever since, buddy.
Fantastic. Merry Christmas, folks. I am, in fact, home for the holidays, but very, very soon into the new year, I will be back out on the road and sure would love to meet you somewhere in 2025 to say thank you for listening to Now Hear This Entertainment. Whether you've been with me for a long time or are relatively new to the show, where can we meet? Well, January 16th to the 19th, I will be at PodFest Multimedia Expo in Orlando. Go to podfestexpo.com for details. You will see there that I will be speaking during that massive event. Something like 2,000 people are expected. Then a quick turnaround as January 21st, I will fly to Anaheim, California to once again attend the massive NAMM show. Go to NAMM.org for details on that music industry trade show, NAMM. It's the National Association of Music Merchants. Sunday, January 26th, I will drive up to Los Angeles and will be there until flying back home to Tampa on January 29th. Soon after that, I will fly out west again. February 6th to the 9th, I will be a speaker at the San Francisco Writers Conference. Visit sfwriters.org for details on that event, which, by the way, is for writers of literature, meaning books, not music. There's going to be a lot more in the new year. Yesterday, I was emailing with someone who is going to have me come speak at their event. Plus, there are some others that I need to finalize travel dates for. Keep up via this show, the weekly e-newsletter, and or the official at Now Hear This Entertainment Instagram account as I announce dates and cities so that we can meet somewhere out on the road. Mark, later in the show, when I give out all your online destinations, the audience will hear me talking about the new album being available on vinyl and CD. Was your decision to have physical units available based on I've been around a long time, that just what I've always been used to? Was it maybe also my audience is used to buying vinyl and CDs? Take us through your decision to not just point people to digital downloads.
Well, brother, I got to tell you, it is part everything you just mentioned, but what you didn't mention, but I'm sure you experienced during the time of vinyl records, was I wanted this to be something that they could hold in their hands that had type print that was large enough to actually read without, you know, a magnifying glass. And the picture on the album cover, it spoke to me in such a way, I said, man, it would be a shame if we didn't have that on an album. Mm. And the red vinyl, you know, I'm a collector. I'm still spinning vinyl. And the red vinyl, I think, appeals to collectors. And it appeals to part of our, you know, red, white, and blue. That's who we are, you know.
The artwork that you mentioned that you wanted everybody to see in something that's not a standard digital download thumbnail size, who did that artwork?
The guy who did the album cover, Bob, submitted a bunch of photographs and different artwork. But when I saw that, I tell you, Bruce, it was like instantaneously I locked into it and I went, oh, man, that's what this album is all about. It's like, you know, the barn, it's missing a few shingles there on the south side. It needs to be repaired or something is going to get in there. You know, something that doesn't belong there is going to get in there, and the shingles would fix it. The fence that's below that where the shingles need the repair, the fence needs some repair. You can see it's been around a long time. This barn has been around at least 100 years. So it's an outstanding statement because, for me, I looked at it and I saw the clouds in the sky above it. They're not all puffy white clouds. Some of them are some dark clouds. And so it forecasts kind of what's inside on these grooves. And to me, it just smacked me. The grain has been cut, but it was oat stubble in the foreground. The grain is cut. It's harvested. There's something to this cover that will speak to each individual just the same way it spoke to me, because it's like music before videos, brother. You know, we had our own videos running when Bridge Over Troubled Water was playing. Everybody had a definition. We were seeing things without the assistance of a video clip that defined the song and gave it one definition.
That's right.
In fact, I was talking with a disc jockey at WNEW New York City that told me they ask 100 people to give their definition of The Bridge Over Troubled Water by Simon and Garfunkel. He said, Farner, there was no two any close to being alike, even, or similar. He says it was 100 diversely different. Bruce, man, that speaks loud to me. It's our imaginations that are starving. We've seen too much. We need to go back to listening and making the definition appear by just listening to the mere words, and we will get back on track. I really believe that. I think videos have shot the music business in the butt.
Well, and Dominic Pages, who was a guest twice on this show, used to say that songs are 3.5-minute movies for the blind, and that's exactly what you just described.
Yeah.
And the album cover, I think it really does speak to this has to be something that you have an experience with. You sit and listen to it on vinyl or on a CD the way that we used to, and you get up and turn the album over, and like you said, you're following along with the lyrics, you're reading the liner notes, because that cover tells you there's a whole story here. And you're not going to appreciate that story if you're running down the road in your car with it playing through Spotify.
Exactly, brother.
Although we're going to play another song off the new album at the end of the show, I want to ask one more question about Closer to My Home, and then we'll move on. A lot of guests will come on this show and talk about a new album and say that they actually had X number of songs written but whittled the list down to, quote-unquote, just the whatever the final total was, 10, 11, 12 songs that made the album. So in your case, Mark, were there any songs that did not make the album that maybe you would like to revisit?
Absolutely. Yeah, there was one that I worked on by myself. I was hearing it during the time of our recording of this album, but I knew that we had enough to work on, being that Closer to Home, I mean, I'm Your Captain, as you know, it takes up a lot of physical space on an LP, you know, 10-minute song. So it takes the place of two or three songs that would have been there. So I knew better than to try to go one more. We already had the bonus track, Friends Forever, written with Jim Peterik. And so, yes, there is, to answer your question, brother, there is a couple of dandies that I've been working on. And I'm, you know, if I didn't think they were a hit record, I wouldn't work on them. I think everything's a hit record, dude.
No, but I like that explanation, though, because a lot of times a guest will say, you know, we picked the 10 best, we picked the 11 best, and they don't really talk about those ones that they discarded. And so it is encouraging to hear someone say, look, you know, I would have included these if it wasn't for the fact that we were doing vinyl and we had to be conscious of the space. And I do want to still do something with those, because it does give life to those that so much work was done on, that, boy, it's a real shame, you know, for them to just be left by the wayside because, oh, well, this is the album and the rest, you know, are in the rearview mirror now.
Right. Absolutely.
When I was giving out my quote-unquote tour dates, if you will, I acknowledged people who might be new listeners to Now Hear This Entertainment. I'm thinking that that might be those of you who solely came to this episode because you're fans of Mark Farner and wanted to hear his interview. For that, I say thank you, welcome, and I do hope that you'll listen to other episodes of the show. But Mark, even though you've been around doing music for, gosh, 55 or so years, thanks to this show having gotten listeners from 166 countries around the world, there are actually going to be some folks just being introduced to you for the first time. All that is to say, I introduced you as calling in from the Wolverine State. How did growing up and living in Michigan shape your sound and, dare I say, your life?
Well, brother, it's living in Flint. Actually, we lived on the outskirts of Flint. We lived on what was left of my great-grandfather's farm. He poured every cement block in the 11-room farmhouse that we lived in.
Whoa.
My father was a World War II veteran, a tank driver in the 7th Armored Division, and returned home with 4 bronze medals, was in 4 major battles, and lived to come home. to my mother, who was the first woman in the United States to weld on Sherman tanks at Fisher Body in Flint, Michigan.
Wow.
So that's the way it started, and we had the orchard out behind the big farmhouse where there was apple trees and Queen Anne cherries and plums and peaches and pears, and the back of the orchard that went, you know, beyond where you could visibly see, there was a river down there that ran through. But prior to getting to the farm, it ran through a golf course. So we would dive in these holes that we knew were holding golf balls, and we would get the golf balls out of there when we were kids and take them up and sell them to the people at the golf course. Of course, after we use the ball washers on the course, we have a basket of these balls and sell them, you know, two for a buck, three for a buck if it had a little smile on it. And we made money that way. I mean, that's kind of what we did. And where I came from, it was a very rural, you know, we pheasant hunted on the back of that. It was a great place for a kid to grow up.
But how does that lend itself? Nothing that you describe sounds like someone that is very likely to pick up a guitar and songwrite and go into music. So how did that come to be, given the environment that you just described?
Well, I was in JV football. I had already been through the band experience. I started in fifth grade playing a tuba. And I went all the way up to the eighth grade when I switched horses, because I kept seeing all the girls were looking at the jocks. They weren't looking at the band. You know, we're out there in the marching band. I got this big tuba. I'm thinking, man, don't they know if this thing is heavy? I'm a good dude. I can carry a tuba. You know, like, so my mother, after I received some football injuries, we were an undefeated JV team. And we were that way because we hung together. We were friends. The whole team was friends, and we won because we were tight. And that's the only explanation. It's like, you know, we just, if it was going to be a pass play, I was defensive linebacker over center. And when I would see the quarterback on the other side going to pass, I would holler out, pass! I mean, you know, we were ready for it. And very good defense. And anyways, I was injured scrimmaging the varsity team, our own team at Kersley High. And my mother told me, she said, the doctor told me you can't play football anymore. Mm. And my heart sunk. And he told her he can't run track either. He's hurt himself so bad that he's just going to have to lay low and heal before he can do anything. Mm. So my mother, for my 15th birthday, Bruce, she got me six lessons and rented an acoustic guitar for me, a K flat top, American acoustic guitar. My guitar teacher gave me three lessons, and then because it was a pheasant season in Michigan, it opened October the 20th, I believe it was, and he shot himself in the foot with a 12-gauge, called my mother and said, listen, Mark's going to have to just go watch the guys in the high school. And my sister, Diane, who was 17 months older than me, and I'll never let her forget it, she used to play the drums. They showed her how to keep beat, and they would play the guitars. And I said, can I go hang out with you? I need to see what those guys are doing with the chords. And, you know, I was taught by Rod Lester and Chuck Hitt, the guitar players, and I sang because they didn't like to. And I was in the school choir, because I would like to sing so much that I, you know, I was a tenor. And so I did a lot of singing before I could even play. I did, however, have my guitar hanging around my neck, and I could fake it. I was like Milli Vanilli on the guitar, you know.
But, you know, everything that you're describing answers my question about how the environment that you grew up in influenced your music, because again, using our minds and not videos, now you can see how you would be influenced to write songs that would talk about Mother Earth, songs that would be all about America, songs that would be about love, songs that would be about all these things that you've described in terms of where you grew up and how you were raised.
Right on, Bruce. Thank you.
I'm joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Northern Michigan by singer, songwriter, guitar player Mark Farner. Visit his official website at markfarner.com. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. His new album, Closer to My Home, is available through the shop section of markfarner.com, including, as you heard, red vinyl or on CD. Look in the music section of Mark's website for his back catalog, with links there to get more music from the likes of Apple Music, Spotify, Amazon Music, and Pandora. Follow Mark on social media, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, and for that matter, join the almost 13,000 monthly listeners on his Spotify. March 15th to the 22nd, Mark Farner's American Band will be on the 70s Rock and Romance Cruise sailing out of Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Visit the tour section of markfarner.com for more details. If you have been listening lately, then you know that I was in Las Vegas, having just come back from there on December 4th. I was speaking at an event there and made some good new contacts and made sure to do the follow-up emails once I got back. That's great, and I'm thankful for the opportunity to have gone out there and met those folks. But nowadays, you don't necessarily have to travel to go make new contacts. In fact, as we get ready to enter 2025, it's no surprise that, as the saying goes, there's an app for that. OWL, which is like the bird, except with two W's and two L's, is a social networking platform that connects people instantly through private one-on-one audio calls. In fact, I mentioned earlier that I will be at PodFest Multimedia Expo in Orlando in January, and I know that OWL is going to have a big presence there. Their app allows you to have a phone call with someone you want to meet, experts from a long, long list of industries, specialty areas, wanting to connect. Get on there and look and see who you want to connect with and ring them up. Here is how to get started. On my podcast website, nhte.net, tap or click where it says News, and then read the article under the headline, Help Now a Phone App Call Away. There are links in there to download OWL for free from the App Store or Google Play. You will also see my invitation code in there. That is a required field as you're setting up the app on your phone. Download it, call me, and let's talk. Mark, before all that, you were talking about being raised in Michigan. I'm told that you actually grew up participating in dancing competitions. Tell us about that, including if it played a part in your stage presence as a musician, as well as what your favorite dance is.
Well, my mother, she kind of kept encouraging me and my sister Diane, the 17-month older sister, to dance. And because she would do a boogie-woogie little dance, and she was trying to get us, come on, you know, and we were kind of reluctant, even though she knew we wanted to, because, you know, we're half her. So we really admired the way she would dance with my dad, with my father. And God rest his soul, he died when I was 9 years old. Hmm. But after so many times, she said, come on, she just grabbed my hand, and she said, do it like this. And she just was counting. And so I followed the numbers. It was dancing by numbers, brother. Mm. You know, I memorized the steps. And then she said, after a couple of days, you know, of listening to music and dancing, she said, now you and Diane dance, like you and I were dancing. And so Diane and I would dance. And then Diane would go, I want to spin you, you know, instead of me spinning her. I want to spin you. I said, no, I'm the boy. You got to let me spin you. and we learned how to boogie-woogie, and that was our favorite dance, the boogie-woogie. And we would do free dance, you know, just free-form dancing where we'd break apart and free-form dance, doing the twist. Oh, yeah, I had to throw the twist in there. And we would go to the National Guard Armory in Flint, Michigan, where there was a jock from a local radio station spinning discs. And there was all of us, you know, dancing. We take your shoes off and leave your socks on because they didn't want you to mar up the gymnasium floor that nice.
Interesting.
And so there was a sock hop. And so we go to the sock hop and dance. And it was great because people would gather around Diane and I because we were the only two that really were doing anything that looked, you know, coordinated. It was very good. I mean, and they'd have dance contests, and Diane and I were so confident in the way we danced, we go out there and win them. So it was great.
Yeah, I like that for the reason that I put into my question, which was I have to believe that that played a part in your stage presence as a musician, because there's so many people who they freeze up, they get nervous, they are just so stiff on stage, or they just want to sit on the stool and play the guitar. And when you've got a dance background, you're going to be so much more willing. It's going to come so natural to you to roam the stage with your guitar, to look like you're having fun, to get the crowd into it, and you know, borderline almost be dancing as you're walking and playing and interacting with the crowd.
Exactly. You hit it right on the nose, Brother Bruce, because that's what I do when I get out there. My guitar is my partner, and I invite the audience with my moves. I extend the invitation to those people sitting there, and a lot of them get up and start boogieing right where they're sitting. They stand up, and away they go. And I love it when that happens because there's something that happens to us. The thing that stops us from dancing is inhibition, of course. So you shed that, and man, you discover who the heck you are, buddy.
Well, I have to ask, as much as you have been doing music for 55 or so years, are you in fact still farming from your home in Michigan?
Yes, we narrowed it down. My wife and I, Lisa and I, have been married 47 years. And we moved off the farm on the other side of the state. We were in the northeastern lower peninsula, and now we moved into the northwestern lower peninsula to get our children in a better school system. Back in 85, we moved over here. We had 1,600 acres that we were farming in the northeastern lower peninsula, and we both, you know, at the same time, we're out there. I'm mowing hay, and she's raking hay, and I'm baling, and she's plowing. My two of the guys that were on the road with me, the road crew, the one guy, John White, his dad was a dairy farmer, and, you know, they just took right to, hey, man, you want some help? We're not on the road. I'll come over and work for you. I said, yeah, man, that'd work great. So they planted. And, it was a wonderful engagement of our time because it keeps you healthy. Just working, you know, cutting firewood. I still cut firewood, but I do it with an electric chainsaw. Where we moved, we got 80 acres here. It is a tree farm. We've harvested several times since we've lived here in 85. But we also plant, you know, vegetable garden where we've got a 95 by 35 fenced off so we keep the rabbits and the deer and the wild turkeys out of there. And we plant, garlic, asparagus, corn, squash, cucumbers, Mexican cucumbers. We plant beets and potatoes of various varieties and some winter squash. We planted last year, but sometimes we plant these Cinderella pumpkins that are a French heirloom variety, and those are delicious, some of the best I've ever eaten. Everything we plant is heirloom, and we don't spray it with any chemical fertilizers, pesticides, or herbicides.
Well, I'll tell you, out of everything that you just said, I agree with you when you said earlier on that recognizing the importance of practicing forgiveness is just so key, and you put that as a number one accomplishment. But I would say a very, very, very close second has got to be your 47 years of marriage. That's just fantastic. Congratulations, buddy. That's outstanding.
Thank you, brother. And it took forgiveness to keep us together this long.
Wow. That's a mic drop moment, but I got more questions. Let's shift back to music. And one of many, many notable events in your career, especially since I did mention in the intro that you worked tirelessly to honor our nation's service personnel and veterans, how did your performance at the 25th anniversary of the Vietnam Wall change you?
Well, prior to, you know, actually seeing the monument, I'd heard about it, Bruce, and I saw it on television. But when I walked up to it, I was overcome. They wanted me to come because the Vietnam Veterans of America took a vote, and my song, I'm Your Captain, was voted number one choice out of all of the Vietnam veterans. So they asked me to come and play it at the 25th anniversary of the wall. And I said, well, you know, how you want it? I mean, they said, well, just, you could just bring a guitar. We're going to have a stage and lights and a PA. I said, well, if you're going to have stage and lights and a PA, I said, I'll bring my band for free. It won't cost you guys anything. It would be our honor to entertain you, do an entire show, and include I'm Your Captain as the closing number. And they couldn't believe that I was going to do that. But when I got there, I had to go over and see the wall. And when I walked up to it, I was just overcome in a way that the television didn't, you know, give me that feeling or hearing about it. But walking up to it and realizing how huge this wall was, and that there were 58,000 names on this wall of men and women who had given it all. It just totally, the sorrow overcame me, and I had to take a knee. That I will never forget. And even as I tell people about it, my heart always revisits that moment.
Yeah, I can hear it in your voice, and you're telling the story as though you just did this, you know, this past summer, which obviously was not the case. Although I'm not sure that I'm clear on, I mean, obviously we know that the wall is in Washington, D.C., but did you actually perform, you and your band, right at the wall? Was it somewhere else in D.C.? Was it, you know, this was actually in another state? I'm not clear on where the actual performance took place.
It was there.
Wow.
Within feet of the wall.
Wow, wow.
And not only our U.S. veterans, Vietnam veterans, but the Canadian Vietnam veterans, our brothers and sisters. You know, it was so overwhelming, especially going into the song, I'm Your Captain, and singing. It was almost as if I had a softball in my throat. I'm telling you, I got so choked up because I look out and there's not a dry eye in the crowd. And people are hugging each other. This is the first time they've ever seen this other person or met this other person.
Yeah.
And they're hugging with a refreshing, sincere love and compassion that, I'm telling you, man, you would have to experience it. There's no words I could tell you, Brother Bruce, that are going to describe it other than it was from God. I mean, it was that heavy.
On that note, though, talking about that song, people hear Grand Funk Railroad and they right away think of songs like I'm Your Captain, songs like American Band, which are anthems. So, you know, you just gave one example, but how do those lyrics still resonate today, all these years later?
Well, the lyrics, I prayed for that song and did my Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep prayer that my mother showed all us six kids, and I put a P.S. on the end of it, Bruce. I said, God, would you please give me a song that would reach and touch the hearts of those you want to get to? And I got up in the middle of the night, not thinking about the prayer that I prayed, and not associating that with what I was doing, because I had a steno pad on my nightstand, and I grabbed it, and I start writing. But I'm not fully awake. I'm in a state of consciousness that is somewhere between heaven and earth in my mind, and I just kept writing. Even as strange as this was kind of sounding to me as I'm writing, it just was flowing. And it's the first song that I'd ever written lyrics to first without, you know, any kind of chord change compelling me to think or set up a mood for me to be in so that I could conceive a verse or a bridge or, you know, a chorus to a song. But this was the first time, and I knew better than to do what most songwriters do. We do a verse, and we go back, and we read through the verse, and it kind of leads us into the second verse, or the mm-hmm. chorus, mm-hmm. or the bridge. But we reread it, and it kind of keeps us in touch with where we're at so that we stay on track, and we make that song, you know, relevant to where mm-hmm. we started. But I knew better than to do that. I knew that if I took my eyes from the page and went back to the top, I was going to lose my place.
Mm.
And so I stayed with it. And it's, you know, it was kind of the first time I'd ever done anything like this, so it was a little bit foreign to me. But when I finished, I got to tell you, brother, my energy, I was spent. There was nothing left in me. And I rolled back underneath the sheet, and I was, bam, I was gone.
Wow.
And when I got up in the morning, I had my coffee on the table out there on the farm. I'm looking out the window at the horses in the pasture, and I have a George Washburn acoustic guitar in the kitchen on a guitar stand. I pick it up, and I start playing. That first lick on the guitar that the I'm Your Captain starts with. I went, wow, that's a cool lick. And then I grabbed a C chord that I didn't even know it was a C chord. It was just a chord that my hand made, and it just was the first time I'd ever played that inversion of a C, and it had such harmonics ringing out because I'd never played this type of C before. And I looked down at my hand, and I'm kind of like in disbelief, and I went, wow, I just grabbed that. Wow. And as I'm looking at it, it came into my mind, go get those words. So I ran into the bedroom. I grabbed those words. I came out. I put them on the table. I start playing and go to that C chord there. I had a cassette recorder. State of the art, brother. I pushed the red button on the cassette recorder, and I put it down, and I take it into rehearsal that day. I just sang right through it. I played right through it. Mm-hmm. I went into that bridge. It was just the way it had to be, and it was magic. It was, that song has been magic, and every time I play it, I think of setting up on the edge of the bed and getting that message. So I thank God for it. And even before we go on stage, I'm always thanking God for an opportunity to play this music and to especially play I'm Your Captain, that means so much to our veterans, to other people, not veterans, but that have used that song to find comfort. And I think because God gave me the talent, I'm given the increase to God in the people that have told me, thousands and thousands of people, brother, over the years have thanked me for that song, and especially the veterans who were coming home from Vietnam, and they played it over and over and over. It would stop, and they would start it again. They had to hear it all the way home, closer to home.
Well, and let's face it, when you knelt down and said that prayer, and then you put your PS on there and said, give me a song that is going to give people the message that you want them to hear, clearly he knew right where he had you, which is the Michigan atmosphere that we talked about earlier, and the message that he wanted people to hear through you and the gifts he had given you was exactly what you described. I need you to give a message to the troops. I need you to spread positive messages about the country that you're blessed to live in. And that's what you did with I'm Your Captain, with American Band, all these songs that are still standing the test of time all these years later.
Hey, man, what a good scenario.
Well, is there one story, maybe one highlight, or who knows, one blooper moment, something that really stands out as a top memory from your long career, presumably out on the road, I would think, maybe something from all your years in music that's a fun story that you can share before we wrap up?
Yeah, we were playing a pop festival in West Palm Beach, Florida, and the Rolling Stones were on this roster. They are going to close the show, and there has been a number of bands, great, you know, wonderful bands that were playing ahead of us. Joplin was one of the bands that played ahead of us.
Hmm.
But we had, at this point in time, we had worked our way up to, we were, you know, pretty much headline in every place we were going.
Mm-hmm.
But when you got the Rolling Stones, you're not going to headline.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You're going to be one of the supporting acts. So we were great and gracious to have that gig as supporting act. But we were on just before the Stones were supposed to go on stage. But anytime Joplin and me, when it was Grand Funk and Joplin on the same roster, if I went on first, I would hang out and watch her.
Mm.
If she went on first, she would hang out and watch us. And then
so cool.
Her and I would get together, and we were great friends. I loved that girl.
So cool.
We weren't boyfriend and girlfriend
friends.
We
yeah.
were just wonderful friends. We had a lot in common, you know, where we were coming from, just basic people. So we were on just before the Rolling Stones. We finished, and we got on the helicopter, which was a Huey. Anybody that's military knows what a Huey is. It's a big, you know, military-type carrier, and it was done up like a motorhome inside with the pin spots and nice plush cushions and all this. And so we get on the helicopter. We fly back to the hotel where we land on the beach, and the Rolling Stones are going to come down and get in the helicopter after, you know, we make our exit from there.
Uh-huh.
But it's early in the morning, like 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, something like that. Darker than the inside of a boot, brother. And we get off that helicopter. We're walking up the path towards this pink hotel that we were staying at. And I'm looking for Janice. You couldn't see very good. I said, "Hey, Ralph." That was the head roadie, and he was leading us all. I said, "Is Janice up there?" And he goes, "Nah, she's not up here." I said, "What do you guys, give me a flashlight. I got to go back down and see if she's in that chopper." So I go back down there, and I look up into the chopper, and she's like pushing down on the cushion, like she's trying to iron something into it with her hands, with her palms.
Mm-hmm.
I get up on the rung of this Huey and look, and I climb up inside, and the rotor was still going around. The motor, the hum of that motor, she didn't hear me. And I said, "Hey, what are you doing?" And she turned around, and she said, "Oh, my God, you scared the crap out of me. What the, you know?" And I look, and I see, you know, she used to carry this paisley print purse that she would carry around her shoulder. It looked like a Baltimore Orioles nest on steroids. This thing was huge, but it was full of different stuff that she liked. And one of them, you know, she had Southern Comfort, and she had Ripple Wine in there. Oh, man, Ripple Wine. Unbelievable. And she had 11 dozen Hershey bars. She loved to eat Hershey bars and drink that sweet whiskey, that Southern Comfort. And it's Florida. It's hot. The Hershey bars are liquid. She's smearing them into the cushions of this beautiful.
No.
Yes. And I said, "Why are you doing that, Janice?" And she looked up to me. She said, "I want to mess up Mick's britches."
Oh, my my gosh.
That's back when he wore those white satin pants. The ones with the big brown spot on the back.
Wow.
Oh, my God. But we thought, no, listen, it's nothing against the Rolling Stones, but this whole thing about a British invasion, Janis and I both agreed, where is the invasion from people that come here and they sing like you do? I mean, they sing in American English. They don't sing in their own country.
Yeah.
And she would say, when you go to England, Mark, do you sing in the King's English? No, hell no, I don't. Are you kidding me? We broke free from that stuff. So the British invasion, and her and I did agree on this, it happened 2 days before Christmas, and it was 1913. The Federal Reserve Act was signed in. That was our British invasion, and the rock and roll had nothing to do with it.
Oh, what a great story. What a great story. We're going to close today with another song from Mark's new album, one called Real. And this is the song that I mentioned in the intro, got over 25,000 views on its video in just the first 4 weeks of being on YouTube. Mark, before I let you go and we play that track, share with the audience all about this one, if you would, please.
Well, you're right, Brother Bruce. It is about the New World Order. And when I first heard a president of the United States talking about us having to adopt a New World Order, it was Bush Senior, and I about crapped my pants because I know all about who's bringing this New World Order and the BS that comes with it, because what it amounts to is this digital enslavement of this free country. And it comes from the source of those people that our forefathers told to stick it up their yin-yang back in 1776. And the crown didn't like that. They didn't like our forefathers breaking free from the grip that they had on them. And I believe that the New World Order horsey poo-poo that we talk about is coming from the descendants of those very same families who were embarrassed that they couldn't hold this bunch of people in this colonization of the United States, that couldn't hold them captive to the financial system that they were playing under at the time. And now we are made to suffer the retaliation from those people who are still pissed at what our forefathers did. And I believe that everything that's happened to this country is a result of that jealousy and the retaliation that those human beings are capable of. And I just want to remind our brothers and sisters that we are free. We have a Constitution. As long as we adhere to the Constitution, hold it up where it belongs, pledge our allegiance to that flag that represents the Constitution of the United States of America and the Bill of Rights, we will never fall prey to digital enslavement, which they would then rule over us and know every penny and prevent us from being the free people who we are.
All that is packed into this song, Real?
Yes.
Wow. Wow. Well, a powerful way to end. And Mark, congratulations again on the new album. Thank you so much for the time. I really enjoyed it. And I'm so grateful that you made time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment. Thank you so much.
Now Hear This Entertainment is a great place for people to come and listen. Man, I love your show, buddy. I really love it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I really do. It means a lot. And audience, with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to singer, songwriter, guitar player Mark Farner. Do visit his official website at markfarner.com. As I mentioned before, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. His new album, Closer to My Home, is available through the shop section of markfarner.com, including red vinyl or on CD. Look in the music section of Mark's website for his back catalog, with links there to get more music from the likes of Apple Music, Spotify, Amazon Music, and Pandora. Last night, I followed Mark on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and I know he would appreciate you doing the same. You heard references to the video for the song you're about to hear. Visit his official YouTube channel, which, by the way, has a combined total of over 646,000 video views. For that matter, tell Mark that you heard him and his music on Now Hear This Entertainment. Remember, March 15th to the 22nd, Mark Farner's American Band will be on the 70s Rock and Romance Cruise sailing out of Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Visit the tour section of markfarner.com for more details. I do hope you like this show, that you're enjoying what I'm doing every week on the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you've made it all the way to the end, thank you for having stuck with Mark and I, and I'm going to assume that that means that you do like the podcast. You can take action to let me know that you appreciate the work that I do to keep making this show happen every week, every month, more than 10 and a half years without missing once, by going on my podcast website, nhte.net, and then using the yellow Buy Me a Coffee logo that you will see there. This is not a sponsor. It's not affiliated with any brand or chain. It's just a fun way for you to send your support, your thanks to me, including a note that I will see when you utilize that option. You can also just head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. That's going to do it for episode 567. Thanks ever so much for listening. Merry Christmas, and I will send you out today with another song from Mark Farner. This is the one he just talked about. It's called Real.
Once you've kept us free.